Okay, we're going to take your phone calls next with Chet Snow on Coast to Coast AM. Get ready. Tell me some of the things that Calista, your wife, does, Chet, also. She kind of compliments what you do.
Well, yeah, we're a team. And Calista's, one of her main interests, as I said, is working with the crystal skulls, particularly Gaia Luz, our crystal skull. Another aspect of our life together, work together, she is European. And so she really has introduced me to many of the sacred sites in France and other parts of Europe, so that we now take people to those places to experience those energies. We both find that it's very important for people to get firsthand experience, not just as a tourist, but I really think it's more like a pilgrim. You go with a different intent. You go and you see a place and experience a place in a different way. She works with toning energy, you know, and also not channeling precisely, but more intuitive reading with Gaia Luz. All of those things are really her work. She's also a talented jewelry maker, interestingly enough. She loves to work with the stones, the crystals, the materials of the earth.
Sure.
I do more the mental work, and she does more, I guess, getting her hands involved with nature, with the earth itself. She's a wonderful retreat leader here in Sedona as well, and does things along that way, taking people out here into some of our vortexes. These are things she's planning to do more of in the future.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
I'll call George. This is Blair in Sedona.
Hey, Blair. Good. It was good to meet you a few weeks ago while I was in L.A.
Well, thank you, sir. I had a Grandfather Martin Hopi experience before I met you, and when Chet brought that up, I had to call. Hi, Chet.
Hello, Blair. Good to see you.
Yeah. Chet and I go back. I actually witnessed him regressing 20 people, George, in the 1990s in Dallas. That's how I met Chet, and it was fascinating to see people go into future regressions. And anyway, my question, Chet, has to do with similar scenarios between Edgar Cayce's trance sessions and the hypnotic future life progressions of your book. Do you have any that really stand out?
Specifically with Edgar Cayce, well, you know, he was very controversial in that area. And I think that he stressed what I would call this new age or positive community building that would be here on the earth, that would be using the mind in a collective way. And he did see project people forward. Of course, his were readings. They weren't sessions in the sense that he did the reading. But he saw a time when the Christ consciousness would be back on the earth and would be working with small groups of people in concentrated communities. And this is very similar to the type 2 that I call in the Mass Dreams book in the 2150 period. So, yeah, there are some similarities to that.
And you also talk about in the book the importance of the buffering nature of time. You know, as we're doing all this stuff, we have all these opportunities for choice. Can you go into that a bit?
Well, I think that that's the key to it all. It really is about choice. It's about the choice. The time that you can make a choice is today. It's not in the past, and it's not in the future. So, obviously, everyone plans for the future, and we also reminisce about the past. But you have to live in today because that's where you have an ability to change something, to do something. As I was saying to George earlier, I know in my own life, the very fact of meeting Helen Wambach, following my grandmother's kind of instructions, and doing and writing the book about the future, which got me very intrigued and interested in the topic, changed my personal future. So that the future that I foresaw in that book then didn't really completely apply to me. And I realized that that was so. Within a few years of having the book published, I saw my life and how it was changing. And I have to say that it was changing for the better. So I think that the same principle can be applied to other people, that as they get interested in understanding and seeing where we might go based on the prophecies and based on the way the ball, as I said, is the curve of the ball right now, where it is heading if we don't do anything, is a very strong incentive to start to want to do something. And then it's all a matter of allowing the universe to bring you the opportunities and taking advantage of them as they come, recognizing them and taking advantage of them.
Thank you. And, you know, it's an attitude of delicious uncertainty toward your future, you know. Hey, thanks, George, for taking my call. Talk to you guys later.
Okay,
well, you have to have fun with it, Blair. If you don't have fun with it, it doesn't work either.
You know, of everything that you have done in your career, Chet, is there one aspect, one area that you have preferred over the other?
Oh, gosh. I love organization and detail. That is a skill of mine. So I love setting things in motion, bringing people together that I think will be inspired and learn and work off each other. And that's what I get the most pleasure out of. And then I like to step back and just watch it occur. And so that's, I suppose, why I like doing the conferences, bringing people like Barbara Marciniak and, Jim Mars, William Henry, who might never meet each other otherwise because they're real different. And they do real different things. And then what I see is the cake rises from the many different ingredients of the dough.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let us go to East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello, my name is Tim.
Hi.
And I think you've got the perfect guest for this question, and I'm sure it's no coincidence. Your guest's wife deals in jewelry, and I'm sure he and his wife can confirm to you that a while back some people tried to replicate the Ark of the Covenant, make it from gold. And because of its unique shape, it took on some sort of electrical generator qualities. What I was wondering is if the crop circle shapes, if they were made into like gold or silver or platinum or just, you know, experiment with different materials, if they would take on some sudden uncharacteristic powers or, perhaps work as a high-powered transistor or circuit. I don't know. Did I explain that enough?
It's Tim, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi, Tim. Glad you're with us tonight. Yes and no. One of the things, and we do know, my wife has never worked with crop circle jewelry per se. She likes to work with stones more than with metal, but, with bindings of metal and things. But we do have some friends who have done that, and we have one friend right here in Sedona who works with woodworking, and they're very powerful shapes, and in gold, they're even more powerful. But what we find is that the crop circles have to be seen in three dimensions, and it's kind of difficult to make jewelry big enough and or third-dimensional enough to capture what the essence of the energy in a crop circle is. Remember, a crop circle is 200, 400, sometimes 600 feet in diameter.
Yeah. And I realize what you're saying, but what I'm saying is simply replicate the shape in small detail, even if we're only, 2 or 3 inches across. But the idea is to see if the the shapes themselves are being given to us as a means of establishing communications through transistors or something along that line.
I don't know if the shape itself would do that. I have seen, as I say, gold or silver jewelry that is based like medallions and that have very powerful impacts on people, and they're a very visual statement. We sell a calendar that's based on the same idea because the photographs are what people see, and it's a statement that you put up in your office or you have in your home, and people respond to that in the same way as they might with a piece of jewelry. I don't know if it has any effect on the wearer, particularly of the jewelry. It's not like a crystal that brings in information and then stores it and transmits it again and amplifies it, not like the crystal skull. So I can't say that I feel it's like that. When you go into the crop circle and it's on the Earth and you're actually out on the planet itself, it's like creating a temporary chakra point of the planet. And I actually think that many of the crop circles come for human beings, but to activate human beings to then go back to their communities and in their parts of the Earth, take that energy and even without their knowing it consciously, put it back into Mother Earth It is a healing for the planet as much as for the individuals who live on the planet. That's my personal take on the crop circles.
What's your best predictions for the next 5 years as we get into 2012?
I think that we are going to see amazing changes in society. I think that there is, you know, the Bible talks about Armageddon, and it usually is put in a very negative light. But what Armageddon really means is a division of souls or a division of energies on this planet. And I think that that is kind of the scenario I think is going to happen. We're going to see some of the best and most unbelievable cooperative and positive life-giving ventures, creative ventures, creation. More creativity is going to be unleashed in 5 years than if we look back, we'll think of it then 50 years. At the same time, there are going to be some really very negative forces that will come up to try to stop that creativity, and it's just going to have to work its way through so that, the positive aspect will take over from the negative aspect. Personally, I think that among the most difficult things we're going to face is that we're going to have to change our basic power supply from electrical to another type of vibration. We're reaching the limits of what electricity can do without being really, really unhelpful to the human body.
That's all right, let's first-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, sir. I believe it is.
Hang on, it tickles me. My name is Tom. I'm from St. Louis, and it kind of tickles me on one level that you're broadcasting from St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, I'm actually on the road. I'm somewhere near Springfield, Illinois. Dr. Snow, was it?
Yes, it is. Chet Snow, C-H-E-T-S-N-O-W.
What I was wondering about, what really caught my attention in listening to your program tonight was you were referring several times to the solar system not being a part of the Milky Way, but rather in a condition of becoming a part of the Milky Way, and referred to what sounded like a galactic collision.
Yep.
What's the other galaxy?
They call it the Sagittarian Galaxy, or Sagittarius, and there's no real name for it because it's so recent a concept in scientific astronomical circles that nobody put much of another name. We call it the Sagittarius Galaxy simply because when we look up on the sky and we divide the sky into the zodiac of the 12 spaces and the constellations, it is we are pointed at a point in Sagittarius, which actually points right at the Milky Way center. The galactic center of the Milky Way is at 26 degrees of Sagittarius, give or take, which, interestingly enough, we're
already
going to be aligning with. That's the 2012 alignment of the solar system with that when it comes into line.
So this galaxy is not a physical galaxy of stars?
Oh, yes, of course.
As I think of it? Or
No, yes, it is. Yes, it is. It is an organized physical galaxy that is literally being eaten up by the Milky Way. And one of the reasons the scientists found this is that the solar system and the Earth is at an odd angle to the Milky Way. If the Milky Way is a lenticular galaxy, that means like a lens, that everything should be within a certain angle of ecliptic, and our solar system and our Earth is not, and certain other star systems we've now found are not. And the reason they aren't is because we don't belong to the Milky Way galaxy, which is a lenticular type galaxy. We belong to one that is at an angle to it.
So this is already happening, is what you're saying.
It's been happening for probably 4 billion years.
The intermix is going on. What we think of as the Milky Way is actually two galaxies that are either passing through, around, into, and out of one another, or combining.
The best scientific thinking is the Milky Way is probably a collection of many galaxies over time, and our galaxy, the Sagittarian one, is a smaller, younger galaxy that is quite literally being eaten or taken over by the father, mother Milky Way one, a much larger collection of stars. And probably all galaxies actually grow this way.
And at some point, things will come into alignment, and you also spoke of a opening of energy availability.
Yes, and that's the 2012. Around
and in 2012?
Yep, 2012.
I'd say bring it on.
Well, it is an opportunity and a challenge at the same time. I like to see it as an opportunity.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Now, I was always told, Chet, we are in the Milky Way galaxy. So nope, how did this change or when?
It's only been 6 months ago, a year ago, less than a year ago. It has been published in any journals that are astrophysical journals about it. If you look it up, you can find it. If you look Sagittarius Galaxy, and it all comes from the old question of why our solar system, why the Milky Way from our point of view is at an angle. It shouldn't be at an angle. It should all be flat, in a sense, if it is lenticular, like a lens. Like there should be a little convex part to it, but it should be at the flat angle, and it's not. We're at about a 65-degree or 70-degree angle, I believe. This other galaxy is also flat in itself, but is colliding with the Milky Way. Think of two hoops, and they're moving one through the other. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like two hoops?
Right.
Each hoop is unique to itself, but where they come together, that's when they join. And apparently our hoop is smaller, and because it's smaller, the density of the mass of the Milky Way galaxy is pulling ours into it, so that eventually all the solar systems of our galaxy will be forced into the Milky Way system. And that will be a tremendous energy change. And we're apparently at the point of no return right now, is what the scientists are telling us.
This is what I'm reading. It says, the center of our galaxy is the Milky Way, lined in the direction of Sagittarius, which is 29,000 light years away from us. So you're saying we're not in the Milky Way?
No, nope, we're actually in another galaxy that they call the Sagittarius Galaxy. I don't think this was even known more than a year ago.
Where can I find this?
Google.
All right.
If you Google Sagittarius Galaxy and then probably in quotes and maybe collision, put those two words together.
No, I know the collision's underway, but I didn't know we were in Sagittarius.
Yes. That's the latest, my understanding is the latest scientific thinking, and it actually explains a lot of things about why our energies are different here in this solar system than in the Milky Way system. And one of the things that they're positing is that when we are pulled into the Milky Way system finally, and we are actually part and forced in the solar system, not just Earth, it will change the whole energy of the solar system and may even mean that life as we know it on Earth will no longer be possible. But that's not going to happen tomorrow. This is a multi-million year process.
Right. Let's turn our fast blasters loose, and we'll do a little research on that. Tell me about your upcoming conference. Do you have one?
Yes. This year we decided to call it It's a Secret, not on the 6 o'clock news. And we're bringing together Andrew Collins, as I mentioned to you, Barbara Marciniak, the Pleiadian Channel, Daniel Pinchback. I don't know if you've had Daniel.
Daniel's been on the show.
His book on 2012, his psychedelic experience. Of course, you know William Henry. You know Linda Howe.
Yes.
I'm sure you know Nick Begich.
Yes, very well. Lynn McTaggart, she going to make it?
Lynn McTaggart has had to cancel. She has something up in England, so she's not going to be with us, but Jim Mars will be. From Holland, we'll be having a crop circle expert and quantum physicist Bert Janssen.
It's almost like a who's who of coast to coast at this conference.
Well, I think I'm pulling this group together because now is the time people need this information. We are at critical times. You know, we almost went to nuclear war last month. It was very close.
Well, it's always close. Stay with us, Chet. We'll be back in a moment. I still don't know about Sagittarius, but we'll see if some of our fast blasters can dig that up. If that's the case, how did I miss that? We'll be back with final calls at Coast to Coast AM. Well, if anybody wants to shoot me an MP3 of a singer, because a friend of mine said, you've got to put this on as a bumper song, I want to hear it first. It's called Midnight Radio by Constantine Maroulis. Send me the MP3 if you have it at george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. We'll wrap up the phone calls with Dr. Chet Snow on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to take final calls now with our guest Chet Snow, west of the Rockies. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir.
Good morning and good evening. We met back in March when you were flying to St. Louis. I was the airline gate agent working your trip and asked you to...
I remember that. You were reading the book, right?
Yes, I was.
I remember that.
Synchronicity just sunk right in.
That's right.
But
Thank you.
I want to just briefly go back to a thing about in the movie 2001, The Space Odyssey. We remember the black monolith kind of appeared like a galactic Stonehenge. And sort of like a portal to a new dimension. Well, at the end of the movie, they had this embryo kind of floating. It became more like a cosmic egg giving birth to what I felt was a new galaxy, kind of like a supernova of creation, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, I think our death, the body decays, yet the soul survives, which gives way for our consciousness to create a new beginning. It's kind of like dropping a stone in a pond of water. Well, the stone drops in water. Maybe some water drops fly up in the air. These different drops of water bounce back down into the water, but creates a ripple effect on the waves, kind of like light bouncing off these little multiverse light reflections, maybe called time travel if you want. But my question to you and Chad Snow is we seem to be in a period now that we're consciously recreating and regenerating our existence to a paradigm of different portals, past, present, and future. Could this mean that our collective consciousness is scheduled to experience this new exotic enlightenment in the year 2012 rather than the chaotic result of our own existence?
Sophisticated question, Chet.
Well, I'm not sure I grasp all of it, but my take on it is that we are on the verge of changing or have the potential to change from individual consciousness to mass consciousness. And one of the things that the information revolution has done is, and the internet is, bring us to that brink. We now need to develop the internet, you might say. So, again, I would come back to my feeling that electricity is only going to take us so far, that the electromagnetic spectrum is much, much bigger than that of just electricity. And so there is an idea out there. There are people already alive, in my opinion. They're probably still children, but they have it in their consciousness to make that leap. And as people start to make the leap, it will become progressively easier, a la the 100th monkey effect, to do so. I'm not sure that those of us over 50 in our present bodies will see it. Maybe we'll have to come back to do it at another time. I don't know. But I do believe that the species is going to be able to make that jump into a form of mass consciousness, because that, I think, is what the future is. That is the wave of creation. And as that happens, the Earth itself and the whole solar system will change. 2012 is only a marker in the birth of that new consciousness. It is not the end point of it. It's the beginning. Make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay,
thank you very much. Yeah, I was flying from LAX to St. Louis, and there he was at the ticket counter. Small world, huh?
Wonderful. That's how you meet the best people, probably. Right out there in the real world.
International Line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there. Hello, you still with us?
Hello. Am I on?
Go ahead. You sure are. Go ahead.
Wonderful.
Sir.
Chet and George, Russ Purvis here, Dome Creek, British Columbia, Kakwiko Village. How you doing, Chet?
Russ, well, how interesting to hear you. I haven't heard your voice in a long time. It was back in Tucson, it seems to me. How's your ecological community going up there?
Oh, it's going fine, Chet. We're just master planned the entire 540 acres this last summer. It's just fantastic. But I wanted to just chat with you for a minute. I experienced a regression session with you in 1996 that had a pretty powerful effect on my life. And the question I had was for you at the moment. In your book, you mentioned horseback riding and using your voice to help people achieve a higher state of consciousness. And I was just wondering if you had worked on either of these two talents since you wrote the book.
Not horseback riding, have to admit. I don't think I've been on a horse in the last 15 years, and at the rate that I seem to find ways to fall and nearly break body parts, that's probably not in my future anymore. Using my voice is obviously something that I still do quite a bit, either in the conferences that we run or the tours that we take or just interviews and things like that. So that's still very much going on. By the way, George, Russ is one of the pioneers setting up new future environments, moved up to Canada and has a whole group there. So a very important work that people like him are doing, not just in Canada, but really all over the Western world. I want to acknowledge that.
Well, thank you, Chet. when you and Calista come up, we'll have to take you to the cedar forest that's in our backyard that's 1,000 years old.
I would love to see that. And, of course, next year we're going to Scotland to see the, I believe it's 3,200-year-old yew tree at Fortingall that they say was very possibly planted by emissaries of King Solomon, that tying Scotland to ancient Palestinian or Israeli history. It's a very fascinating thing that's going on over there. It's one of the oldest plants, apparently, in all of Europe.
So, boy, if that tree could only talk, huh?
I'm sorry?
If that tree could only talk.
If it could only talk, you're absolutely right. And I actually have seen it already. It is an incredible, massive tree. It's actually being held up by supports. It's gotten so big. But there again, this is the thing that I think we have to take advantage of while we can still do these things in our physical bodies, that this planet has an incredible riches for us to learn and to experience and to be in, not only mentally, but also physically. And that's one of the goals that I have, is to help that consciousness to emerge that way.
When you mention that you believe the crop formations have been created by interdimensional beings, explain the beans one more time. What might they look like?
Interdimensional intelligence is the word that I use. And I do that very specifically, George, because I'm afraid that we are limiting by saying beings, because then we think of individualized physical entities like ourselves. And I'm not sure that's how it is. I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm not sure that that's how it is. I think it's perfectly possible and plausible that we could be dealing with, as the Pleiadian time travelers say, our own future reaching back to us as that collective consciousness influencing our birth process into itself.
East of the Rockies, you sure does. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hello, is this East of the Rockies? Mark from Manhattan?
It is East of the Rockies, and if you are Mark, then it's you.
This is a wonderful show, and it's great to talk to you, George, and to you, Dr. Snow. I've been lucky enough to work with some of the crystal skulls, like the Mitchell Hedges skull, and Shannara with Nick Nasserino, and a friend of mine went to the Far East and came back with a crystal skull, and also a Tibetan crystal lightning bolt, which is, you know, we're learning sort of how to use that. And also together we found this amethyst crystal skull. And my question is, you know, there's the prophecy about the 13 crystal skulls. Could you elaborate on that? And I also just wanted to add that trees do talk.
Oh, I perfectly believe that they do talk, absolutely, and they do have a story. And if you can put yourself in a vibration mentally, you can get in touch with the trees and their stories. I can tell you a whole thing about a parasol pine that down in the Mediterranean, which is happens to be where I met my wife for the first time, and boy, that was a story. But anyway, coming back to crystal skulls, to be serious here for a moment, yes. The crystal skulls, the legend of their coming together, the 13 crystal skulls, which, as I say, if we believe Doña Flor de Mayo from the Mayans, it's really 52 ancient crystal skulls coming together. This is a prophecy about this collective consciousness being created, in my opinion. They will not come together, it says, physically and or come, some of them are in another dimension, they will not come into our dimension until humanity has reached a point where our consciousness will make use of the energy that will be created, which will be very powerful, very psychical, and also very physical, in a positive, loving, constructive, human-creating way, not in a destructive way, which, alas, they would be seen as a weapon by far too many people living on the planet today. So I don't think it's anytime soon that all of them will come into our dimension. However, the ones that are here now, I think of as ambassadors. And they are ambassadors showing us the possibilities that if we put ourselves forward in positive intention with them, we can create fabulous things and do miracles as healing and
future vision and other types of things that I know people have done with some of these skulls. I actually had a personal experience with the Mitchell Hedges skull where I saw into the future with it. It was real powerful, and it was so powerful that it almost took me away physically, and I had to download the information back into the crystal skull in order to keep in my body. That was back in 1987, so a long time ago. Very, very interesting stuff. They're powerful. They're very powerful. We don't know enough about them. Actually, again, I come back to the indigenous elders. They have traditions that reach back knowing more than we do, and we could really learn so much more from them if we would only open and listen.
Okay, let's go now. First-time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Thanks for holding.
Hi, this is Jacob from Chicago.
Hey, Jacob. Great.
How you doing?
Good.
Well, thank you for putting me on. I've been listening to your program for a very long time. My question was for Dr. Snow.
Mm-hmm. He's ready to go.
It was about crop circles and their creation. I do a lot of research on chromatics. I'm a sound musician. I work with pure sound waves. And so I've done a lot of research on chromatics by Ernst Chladni. Are you familiar with any of his work with acoustics and chromatics?
Say the name again.
Ernst Chladni. He was a German scientist.
I've heard the name. I don't know too much of that, but I do know that there is a definite sound component in crop circles. I have seen crop circles on the day that they formed, and you could actually still see the bundling of some of the crop, how it was laid down with parts of the not the stems, but the leaves around the stems curling, and it was clear that this was a vibrational and very likely a sound that would create such a thing. There's a woman named Eilis who has done a lot of crop circle research in the past, who actually wrote a pamphlet, it was never published as a book, alas, on that very topic of how sound and harmonics of sound would create certain forms in the crop circles geometrically. There's a relationship.
Okay.
There's no doubt in my mind but what there's a relationship.
Has
that
anybody ever
sound
heard
and
it?
Light, remember, sound and light are both part of the electromagnetic spectrum, after all.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if anybody had ever heard sounds while crop circles are being formed.
There have been very odd sounds, and there's actually a recording that was made by Colin Andrews and some others way back maybe 20 years ago or 15 years ago, and it's a chirping, very high, high, high pitch. And the odd thing is that when you slow down, normally the beat should get longer. It doesn't. It just goes lower in octave. It stays the same vibrational length. Which
is
probably not possible, and yet it happens.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Jonathan Goldman knows more about that.
Wildcard line, you're up with us in Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hi, Bondifex from Vancouver.
Sure thing.
Hi. Chad, the question is for you. Are you aware of the global grid map by Becker and Hagens and the ley lines and grid lines and vortices?
Not that one. I know of one by Robert Kuhn, and there are some others, but... It's Becker.
Becker and Hagens is very important for your listeners and yourself to check this information out. It's fabulous. It answers so many questions of all these callers that have phoned in tonight. Anyway, you do a search on Becker and Hagens and go down to the bottom of the page, and it says the Convergent Index. It has everything, ties it all together, including the crop circles. You'll find it fascinating. Anyway, you mentioned that you were activated on 1987. That would have been the convergence, wouldn't it not?
Actually, my experience with the crystal skull was about 2 months after the convergence. I was at the Robert Menor Institute doing a program there when Anna Mitchell Hedges came with the crystal skull to Charlottesville, and a bunch of us at the Institute went over to meet her. So we had been doing some pretty far-out stuff for a week there before meeting her. So I think that was part of what happened. It's like mind training was going on. So Hagens, H-A-G-E-N-S.
Right. And were you fascinated by the crystal skulls when you first saw them, Chet?
Well, my first experience was that one with Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like I say, back in 1987. And it was so powerful that, as I say, my body started to go numb, and I realized that I had to do something to reverse the flow of energy because it was greater than my mind and my physical body could take. What it was giving to me.
You could feel it. You could feel that energy, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I saw my heart stopping. And, I've just been doing a week of intensive mind work and mental activity and psychic evaluation and elevation. So I knew very well what was going on. And it's interesting because I looked back at the skull, and the skull told me what to do, and I did it. And Anna let me do it because she was very psychic herself. And within 10 seconds, boom, I mean, I felt like all the information went back out of me. That's a shame, isn't it? But I knew I couldn't hold it all.
These thousands of therapists that are part of the group that, you know, your past life research and therapies group.
Yes. Now called the IARRT, IART.
Mm-hmm. Do they all seem to agree that past lives are real?
I'd say that it runs the spectrum. Probably most of us would say it's therapeutically real, and therefore it's real in the subconscious of the person experiencing it. It's not fakery, quackery, blah, 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 blah,
right.
Placebo
okay.
effect. And so because it is therapeutically, psychologically real, it has an impact on the life of the person. And if you can get the person to go through that emotional moment of release, their current life will change. It's very powerful. That's
why
it's real.
That's the important thing. If it's perception, then so be it. But,
of course, and that's what therapy is really all about. Whether it is historically accurate or not, I have no idea, except that I myself have had several experiences where I have found physical evidence of things that I didn't know except through regressions, and then I went to the places and actually looked it up and found it. And that is in my own personal set of experiences.
I've always believed that the soul comes back, Chet, in order to get perfect.
I'm convinced that we come back to seek balance, and perfection perhaps is perfect balance. It's like perfect pitch. Again, I use a sound analogy because I think it's very, very important. It's very important to do, and so anyway, I'd love to be on here all night, but I know we have to stop. Can I give my website one more time?
It's, yes, sir. Go for it.
www.chetsnow.com. That's C-H-E-T. SNOW.com. And I'd like to mention one other thing before we leave. Look up another website. It's called Limitless One. One is spelled out. LimitlessONE.com. You might find it part of that new consciousness that I've been talking about for the future. Just go and have a look-see and see if it grabs you. That's all I'll say.
Very good. Thank you, Chet. Great guest. We'll have you back again.
Thank
for Karis Coburn.
Come.
Okay. Steve Carr, got to say goodnight. Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lazarsour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. Until then, be safe, everyone.